If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, I'm Oliver Condy, the editor of BBC Music Magazine, and welcome to the BBC Music Podcast. You can buy a copy of the magazine at your local newsagents or download our app to your iPad, Kindle Fire or Android tablet. And for the latest music news and more, head to our website at classical-music.com. This week, we gathered together members of the BBC Music Magazine team for First Listen, a monthly slot where members of the magazine editorial team chat about and rate an important new release. With me in the BBC Music studio today are Jeremy Pound, the Deputy Editor, Rebecca Franks, our Reviews Editor, and Rosie Pentreath, our Online Editor and Staff Writer.
Hello. Hello.
This month, we've been listening to a fascinating recording on the Sonoluminous label of music for string quartet and didgeridoo by Peter Sculthorpe, performed by the Del Sol Quartet and didgeridoo player Stephen Kent. But is this recording a case of didgeridoo or didgeridon't? Let's hear the opening track, the string quartet number 12, From Ubir. So that was the opening of the string quartet number 12 from Ubir for string quartet and didgeridoo. Rebecca, this is quite unusual music, but it just seems to sort of work so well, doesn't it? The didgeridoo and the quartet together, an unlikely combination.
Yes, and it's interesting that in the booklet note, the Del Sol Quartet talks about this blending of the kind of European quartet tradition with traditional Australian instruments, the didgeridoo. And it creates this really distinctive sound world that does seem completely sort of inextricably linked to the landscape and the sense of history and place, really, in
it's
Australia.
Like an earth. Like an earthing sort of note, like a drone at the bottom. I mean, we've got a very sort of European sound from the quartet, Rosie, haven't we? Mm. And then we've got this sort of low rumble underneath that sort of seems to connect with the ground,
connect with
Australian earth.
Mm, yeah, it seems like that Sculthorpe's kind of consolidating his... He had a very kind of idyllic childhood in Tasmania and... He describes it as kind of a lonely place, but also, yeah, very idyllic childhood. They were just very remote. And then, obviously, he studied in Oxford for a time and he, you know, had this career as a composer. And it's kind of like he's is consolidating those two parts of the composer's history in a way. But yeah, like you say, it's really grounded in the landscape, and you can, I mean, I've never been to Australia, but from pictures and from hearing about it, it seems like the music really evokes the landscape in a very powerful way.
What is quite interesting, however, is that Sculthorpe was very, very politically sensitive here, is that he didn't go piling in and decide that he himself wanted to just bring a didgeridoo and add it to a string quartet. He was aware of the sort of... It has actually a religious significance, does the didgeridoo, for Indigenous peoples. And so he actually waited until he was approached to write works for didgeridoo and string quartet. It wasn't just his idea to do that. And so it came fairly late on in his career.
In fact, the quartet we just listened to was completed in 1994, but the didgeridoo was only added in 2001.
And it was actually inspired, I think, by William Barton, who's this fantastic didgeridoo player. And it was kind of, I think, he was actually the player that was specifically written for this piece, Earth Cry, is orchestral thing.
Mm. But the sound really is a very European sound. I mean, you know, you can really sort of... he's really, really wanting to unite the two. I think Peter Sculthorpe, first of all, wanted to portray Australia as this very sort of joyous place, wanted to write happy music about Australia, but then realised about, you know, how wrong, how false, how deceitful that was, given the plight of the Indigenous people there. And this is sort of, I suppose, the culmination of much of his philosophy about living in Tasmania and Australia.
But I think also he sort of, because obviously he came over to Europe and he studied over here and travelled over here, and I think his sort of encounters with Schnittke and Arvo Pärt and Goretzky, so these kind of the holy minimalistic, you know, and the kind of sense of sorrow and sort of lament that comes through in a lot of their music. You can hear bits of that, I think, in his music as well. And I think that was when he decided to not just write simply joyous music.
And I think you get a lot of that in the following quartet, the string quartet number 14, Quambi. What I find extraordinary, actually, about this particular quartet is that he does, in the third movement, produce this sound effect. The strings produce this wonderful sort of seagull-like crying on the strings, the sort of swooping sounds, which we'll hear in the moment, actually, in an extract. For me, it sort of sounds almost like shooting stars going across the sort of open Australian skies, and the sort of very much connection with nature.
Sad sounds as well, though,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah. And it's extraordinary writing, because he leads from that, which is very, very pictorial and very graphic, into quite a folky tune, very, very beautiful tune as well, which follows that. It's the perfect melding, as you say, of these two worlds here, that sort of him imagining the landscape and trying to portray it using the instruments in front of him, and also adding this sort of... It's very melodic at times, this music.
And that particular movement is very tender, isn't it? It's very kind of lyrical and warm.
Yes, and with the sort of seagull crying, it has this sort of poignancy that would otherwise not be there. I think we should hear that extract from On High Heels, from the string quartet number 14, the sort of transition from that sort of very inventive writing into the much more sort of melodic folk song inflected music. So that was an extract from the string quartet number 14. Rosie, the didgeridoo playing is quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's just a real range of different sounds. You've got the kind of these incredible shrieks that kind of go right through you and just really, yeah, kind of cut through the pain almost. And then you've got more kind of throbbing drones and more
sort of rumbling things. Sounds as well, yeah. Don't you? Sort of snarling sounds. It sounds like it's a really live kind of sound, isn't it? Really, you know, we were talking earlier about it sounding like it's coming out of the earth. It really does sound like that to me.
I find it works almost at its most effectively when it's serving almost as a pedal note, and you just hear the low note of the didgeridoo underneath, and then you have the quartet playing just normally above it. It's very simple, but incredibly effective when he does that.
And it goes very well with the string writing, because with the bow on the violin, you can just renew the
the sort of stroke of the bow and to form a seam of sand with the didgeridoo. There's a lot of circular breathing. You know, you don't hear a break in it. It's almost it's got sort of infinite lungs, but this sound just carries on and on and on, and it's haunting in that way. Well, I think we should hear an extract from the string quartet number 16. And the movement I found most moving, I think, was the movement called Freedom, movement number 5. That was an extract from the movement Freedom from the String Quartet number 16. I think it was music that sings of dreams of a free life beyond confined spaces and razor wire fences. There really is, Jeremy, a sort of sense of Peter Sculthorpe having an extreme sorrow about the Aboriginal people in Australia.
Yes, he's throughout his music, he addresses an awful lot of political issues, does Sculthorpe. It's not actually just always about Australian issues. He also talks about kind of more global political issues in other works. He's a very strong and very effective voice, actually. What is interesting, actually, in this particular string quartet is that the five movements are actually, they're just generic titles. There's loneliness, anger, yearning, trauma, and freedom. But his style of music throughout this quartet is extraordinary, particularly in the string writing in this instance, actually, rather than just the didgeridoo playing. There's some real modal inflections in the first and fifth movements. And there's one little moment as well, which almost reminds me of sort of Bach's cello suites, kind of that moving between strings. It's wonderful. It's so inventive.
And I was going to say some of the more sort of still moments really remind me of Beethoven, in fact. A sort of sense of building something out of a very small motif. Of the music just building in intensity and intensity, but actually using real economy of means.
And you never feel like he's a magpie, do you? You never feel he's just pinching bits from other people. He's actually, is definitely his own music.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the kind of sort of folky kind of, I think that was the word you, I don't know if that was the word you used, but feel of the first movement.
Modal.
Because, modal, that was it. Modal feel. Because, you know, that's very striking. He actually uses a traditional love song from Afghanistan. But again, it's not a magpie approach. That actually has historical significance because there were many asylum seekers who came over and many people from, well, Afghanis who came over and were helping to build the Ghan, it's called the Ghan Railway that goes up through Australia. So that is, again, a sort of important part of Australian history that has then been used for these musical purposes.
So let's have some scores out of 10. Jeremy.
I knew very little about Sculthorpe until he died in the summer. And now, since then, two discs in particular have really kind of drawn me to him. First was his complete piano works, which was released earlier on by Tamara Anna Czeskloska. And then this, which again is brought music to me, which is completely new to me. I've loved all the works on it. I think there's five works here. Every single one of them I enjoyed. Very full of variety, brilliant playing. And I'm going to give it 9 out of 10.
Very good. Rebecca?
I'd like to give this 8 out of 10. Similar sense of sort of discovery for me. And I thought the playing was really very good. I'd be interested to hear different interpretations of it. I haven't heard many others and I would be interested to hear that, you know, to get to know it even better. But yeah, 8 out of 10.
Rosie?
I'm going to go with a bold 10, actually. Sculthorpe's kind of awareness of Australian and international political issues, I think, you know, he's so sensitive to them and he's so clever about them. And also the music is fantastic, it's beautiful. It was, yeah, an incredible listen. And the way he's made a string quartet work with a didgeridoo, I think, is, you know, everything from brave, clever, you know, it just sounds incredible as well. So, yeah, 10.
I'm not going to be quite so bold. I'm going to give it 9. There is always room for improvement, I think. But I thought it was the most stunning disc I've heard in a while, mainly because of the real juxtaposition of the didgeridoo playing, of which I didn't know much about. And I had no idea the timbres and colours one could get out of it. And the string quartet playing is absolutely superb. And Peter Sculthorpe's music is so poignant and so sort of packed full of meaning and sorrow and yearning. And so I thought it was just the most wonderful, wonderful disc. So I'm going to give it, as I say, 9, which I think gives it an average of 9 out of 10. And that brings us to the end of this month's First Listen. Do join us next month when we'll be getting together once more to discuss another major new recording. Goodbye.
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 Thank you for listening to this BBC Music Magazine podcast, which was produced in our Bristol studio by Jack Fletcher. For more of our podcasts, visit our website at classical-music.com or simply head to iTunes.